Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is gambling attorney Bob Nersessian. Bob is a frequent guest on the show, and he regularly answers legal questions about various types of situations that gamblers can find themselves in. Bob Nersessian, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
As always, I love being here, especially getting grilled by you, Bob.
Oh, we love to have you here. All right, we got a immigration question. I know this is not your specialty, but let's see what we have here. If a non-U.S. citizen were backroomed and roughed up, are his rights any different than those of a citizen?
His rights are pretty much the same because the rights are established by the state laws that you'd be suing under. If they are here legally, then they just treat it like any other litigation. I've had foreign clients suing Casino Security before and even currently, and they don't process any different than a citizen case. Just from some past history, and I don't know that this is still true, if you're an illegal alien rather than just a non-citizen, you actually might be better off if this happens. Because generally, if you have a tort claim pending, as I recall, I don't know this for sure, but you can get some special ability to stay here while you secure your rights against somebody else for having violated them. So you might get something, not a green card, but I get to be here or get to come back for hearings. We could permission start, from immigration.
We could start a new movement. Tort claims for DACA kids. I apologize.
Oh, we're going to get mail on that.
Yeah,
thanks.
Another listener writes, a friend of mine tends to frequent some Vegas strip clubs, and he has a habit of getting dancers to come back to his room with him. If he drives them and they are in the car and he gets pulled over and she gets searched and found with illegal substances, what legal jeopardy does that put him in?
Well, in some states, and again, every state is different on all of these things.
When I'm you guessing ask if questions. It's a Vegas strip club that we I can kind of narrow it down
well,
to Nevada.
Okay. But the question is universal.
Okay.
Why, do you only have a Las Vegas audience? Sorry about that. That was rude.
Yeah. And I don't know what stripping has to do with any of this, right? The question is, if somebody is in your car and they have drugs, right? That's really what the guy's asking.
There is a doctrine that if it's in your car in any way, you are in possession. However, the circumstances that are being described will mitigate against that, and you're likely not in a lot of trouble. But I think this guy is under-worrying if this is his worry, because... it wasn't an STD question statement, but more to the point is, if she's in the car and he's pulled over, they aren't going to find drugs when they search her. They're going to find drugs in his seat when they search the car. Because she's going to off those before she gets out of the car.
Well, the other thing is, why would the police be searching her if he gets pulled over? I mean, what did he get pulled over for that would have the police getting her out of the car and searching her?
I would love that were the case. But you know police, and you know my position on police and what they do with the ability to search somebody or overbear or get information and try and stretch anything to reach something where they can walk away with someone in custody. There is a whole line of cases, and it's pretty clear. If you pull over someone for a traffic violation and there's somebody sitting in the seat in the car, and you ask him for ID and he says no, that's fine. Another set is, if you are doing a pat down of the driver, can you force everyone else out of the car and do a pat down on them? Depends on the individual circumstances. But the idea that somebody who is in a car getting pulled over, especially someone who might be dressed in a
skimpy outfit.
Yeah, that doesn't quite reach below 14 inches above her knee. Yeah, that I wouldn't be surprised to see that happening. So I know Richard and the rest of us in the world would love to think that police aren't that crazy and that kind of stuff doesn't happen, but you can see people getting shot in the back all the time.
Yeah.
So, and this is materially less intrusive, and they'll take those actions too. You have seen the video out there of the Las Vegas police kicking a guy and beating him half senseless when he's already two-thirds of the way into a diabetic coma, haven't you?
Yeah, I did see that.
So,
yeah.
So why would that surprise you? Seriously.
Well, you know, in many of the cases, first of all, usually those the stories that we've talked about with blackjack players or poker players where their money gets stolen, usually this is on, you know, interstate highways that we've had these incidents. And I don't think many of the stories I've heard, the people have said, you know, they tore the car apart, they searched everything, but they never searched me. And my kind of rule of thumb is to always keep the cash on my person, because it seems like most of the time that they don't search the person. So,
and you're a brave man, because you just said that on the public airwaves.
Well,
is that where you keep your drugs too?
If they're targeting me specifically. Yeah, right.
Let's move on. In Pister versus Garcia, a case involving players being mistreated at a tribal casino, and you, Bob Nersessian, successfully argued this case up to the Ninth Circuit Court. One listener wants to know if the citation he gives, caselawfinlaw.com, U.S. Ninth Circuit, 1706234.html, is that write-up accurate and final?
Well, that write-up on the site he gave there is accurate and final. That's not a proper citation form. The decision, I believe, is also in Fed Third, which is a West reporter, and that would be the official citation. And also a Lexis or a Westlaw citation, which are both computer databases, are more appropriate. But you can give that site too, and I believe that is accurate and complete.
Now, that was a federal court decision. Is it also precedent at the state court level?
Well, the only thing that was involved in that case was a federal court question, or a federal question. That's why it was in the Ninth Circuit, not in state court. That was a sovereign immunity issue. So the question that's being asked is, does the decision on sovereign immunity apply to state courts? The answer is sovereign immunity is a federal doctrine. So to the extent that the facts apply in a state court, they don't have to follow federal law, but that's the law that is persuasive on the federal issue. And my personal thoughts is a state would be required to follow the federal law, but the state of Nevada and a couple other states have said, no, we don't. We can ignore the federal law and still apply our state's law, not our state's law, a different federal court's law on the issue, and we don't have to follow the federal court that governs us.
For the listeners that missed the last few episodes, rather than sort of talking about the technicalities of which law applies to who, What is this decision? What is the bottom line of this decision? You can sue somebody from an Indian casino?
The decision in
plastic Pister, donkeys can be sliced in half by the casino. That's
I bought a bag of those plastic donkeys because they are so adorable. I'm serious. But the decision in Pister versus Garcia is that individual non-control persons of the tribe who commit a tort, that is a wrong, against a patron at an Indian casino can be sued under state law as individuals. If you're a lawyer listening to this, never sue the tribe, because if you sue the tribe in a state or federal court, you are going to get hit with sovereign immunity, and they're going to dismiss your case. I never sued the tribe in Pister versus Garcia. I sued the individuals who committed the false imprisonment and the assaults and batteries against my client. So what happened there was the Ninth Circuit said, yes, there's no sovereign immunity for those individuals. There are cases reported that are exactly the same where the individuals were sued, but they included the tribe and the whole case got dismissed. So the trick is don't sue the tribe. Are the listeners wondering about the donkeys? Because one of the things that was on in that case is one of my clients who had gotten a promo of a little plastic donkey that looked like it came out of a Chili's restaurant, had always played with it on his on the machine he was playing. And the tribe and the surveillance reports and everything else were focusing in. There were even videos zooming in on the little plastic donkey. And they all suspected that it was some kind of radio gaffe that could control the hands coming out of a video blackjack machine. Insanity personified, but written in black and white and with Arlo Guthrie's circles and arrows and the whole nine yards. And I literally did find on Alibaba or something a whole bag of these donkeys, and I give them out sometimes as promos of my own because they're just so cute.
Different question. A gambler from California wants to know the real reason you can't have real craps or roulette in that state.
Because they decided you can't.
Because this is a compact between the state and the tribes.
They just decided you can't.
Well, I thought there was an old law, an old...
Well, no. Whatever, including in Nevada, every state in the country, to the extent that it allows gambling, allows the gambling that it allows. No gambling is allowed otherwise. So when they pass laws that allow something, they haven't passed a law that says you can't play craps here. They've never passed a law that says you can play craps here.
I see.
Okay. So even Nevada still follows the common law that gambling is a public nuisance. That's why you have to go to the Gaming Control Board. That's why casinos can't sue you to get their money back. That's why a dozen other things, because we still recognize the doctrine that gambling is a public nuisance and only what is licensed and what is statutorily allowed is allowed.
So if it's not mentioned anywhere about, I'll pick backgammon, because it might not be a state law about backgammon. If Richard and I are gambling at backgammon, we can be arrested for that? Is that what you just said? If it's not specifically allowed, it's...
I don't think... In California, I think you're allowed to gamble legally in your own home. Like, I know home poker games are legal in California.
Yeah, but then you reach a gray area from when you're having a home poker game or actually running a blind pig. You don't know what a blind pig is.
I don't know what a blind pig is.
Other than the obvious.
Yeah, little bossy just walked into the wall, right? No.
It's Petunia.
A blind pig is a term of art from Prohibition, and then it survived after Prohibition, that is an after-hours illicit gambling and drinking joint.
Okay.
For profit.
I also remember in the book Molly's Game, which they made a movie out of, she was told that she wasn't doing anything illegal because she was not not charging the players to play. There was no house rake, right? She was hosting the game, but the players were playing amongst themselves. So,
and that's, the law of gambling, or what's the seminal work that I didn't write?
Gambling and the Law?
Yes. Okay. You'll do much better reading that book for the history of gambling and understand what I'm saying, because the author explains it about as clearly as it can be explained for considering how obtuse the entire area is. But the bottom line is gambling is a bad thing under the law, and the only exceptions are those that the states allow.
All right, moving on. An AP in Southern California with a prospective case against an employee of a tribal casino wants to know if you have a recommendation for a good attorney to help
him. I'm sorry. I saw that earlier. I have no idea.
Okay.
I can give the name Mike Benninghausen, but he's up in San Jose. I worked a case with him. Other than that, I don't know anybody in California who, frankly, gives two cruds about gamblers and their problems.
Uh-huh. All right.
But we would tell them, don't sue the tribe.
Yes. Yes. A casino in New York, Turning Point, has opened two satellite casinos on land that is not part of the reservation or federal trust. Hypothetically, if something worth suing over happened in one of these satellite casinos, is it your opinion, Bob Nersessian, that the cases would be allowed to proceed because the casinos are on U.S. soil?
Still can't sue the tribe. Okay? They're letting tribes get away with anything. I mean, it's likely you can't sue the tribe. I looked at this a little bit. It is a situation that has not yet arisen. I understand the arguments that he would like to make. I don't hold out for them much because I've recently read a case where even now when places like Harrah's partner with the Rincon tribe and you get Harrah's Rincon, they're extending sovereign immunity to the state casino. You know, Harrah's can say, well, we're piggybacking on the Indians, and now all of a sudden Harrah's is an Indian tribe? Okay. So this sovereign immunity stuff is very, very difficult.
It's called
very hard to get through it.
It's called Harrah's Southern California now. The Rincon is no longer part of the name down there. I don't know if that matters.
Is it still an Indian tribe? Probably. Is it still a tribal casino?
Probably. It's still in the same physical location.
Okay. Yeah, well, it shows you how much I gamble.
Well, when you go down to Barona, which is because you can stay there for free because you're in the Blackjack Hall of Fame, you know, stopping by Harrah's Southern California isn't that big of a diversion.
I don't go to Barona for the gambling. They don't let Hall of Fame members gamble there.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. We got to talk to him about that. Here's a case from my own history. Back in 1997... Bally's Casino in Las Vegas had some three-coin $25 and $100 machines, meaning it took $75 or $300 respectively to fully load. These machines were from Bally Systems, which was a slot machine manufacturer that has since been swallowed up by Scientific Games. The game was 10-7 double bonus, which returns 100.17 in the IGT version, but 100.52 in the Bally version because straight flush pays 400 for one. Excuse me, 80 for one in the Bally version rather than 50 for one. So I was playing $75 a hand, ended up with a straight flush. Instead of being paid $6,000, which is the correct amount based on 80 for one, the machine showed $37.50, which is the amount based on 50 for one. I was familiar with both amounts because those were common amounts on that game for other four of a kinds. This is a malfunction of some sort.
No, it wasn't. But we'll get there. Finish your question.
I spoke up, showed them the pay schedule, and they paid me the correct amount. They also shut down the machine for the rest of the day while they checked things out. I presume the machine had some sort of a malfunctions void all pays sticker on it. So I suppose the casino could have argued that I should get nothing other than my $75 ante back because it was a malfunction. I didn't think of this at the time. I asked for the extra money, and they gave it to me. If this happened to one of your clients, and the casino either gave them just their money back, or perhaps just the $37.50 that was displayed on the screen, would you think the player had a legitimate case?
I'm pretty sure that he absolutely has a legitimate case. The precedent case in front of the Gaming Control Board would be Alper versus Sahara.
Uh-huh. I know that case. I know that Alper. I know that Sahara.
Okay. Well, the bottom line is, where you said this is a malfunction, it's not. What happened there is, you know, the insides of these machines and their payback schedules can all be programmed. And somebody put that machine out there with the 50 rather than the 80 program programmed into it. That machine operated exactly as it was programmed to operate. What's the malfunction? Instead, there's a discrepancy between the payoff schedule and what the machine was programmed to pay. That's not a malfunction. If they don't pay the money, the casino is cheating because the gaming regulations require them to pay according to their payoff schedule. So, yes, I think you think you might have gotten over on the casino because they didn't say something. I think the casino might have looked at that and said, oh, crap, pay this guy and fix this machine because we're hanging out there.
Yeah, and then it didn't take them 5 minutes to come to that conclusion.
Right.
But and it was like $2,200 different, so it's not like I was going to hire an attorney for $2,200.
No, but if they have a pay schedule on a machine, and then let's go back to the old coin times. If they actually can put a slug in away so that every seventh coin doesn't drop out of the coin slot, the casino could do that. So when you're getting, let's say every 10th coin, so it makes my math easier. So when you hit 100 coins and it spits back and you got all the noise and you got a bucket of coins laying in your tray, but and you assume it's 100, but it's only 90, that's the casino cheating. They have a duty to make sure that those machines pay according to the payoff schedule. And if they program them to pay less than the payoff schedule, the gaming control board will certainly have an issue with them and certainly could even have their license if it was intentional.
Very good. A few weeks ago on this show, March 22nd, we had a female guest who has gotten more hate mail than any of our other guests recently. She announced she was going to enter the World Series of Poker dressed as a man. Apparently, she has an androgynous name like Pat or Chris or Lee or Sam, or something that could easily represent a man or woman, and her Caesars Total Rewards card is made out that way. Seth Polonsky, Director of Communication for the World Series of Poker, heard that she was planning on doing this, and he said it was against the rules for a woman to enter dressed like a man, and that now he knew about this, his staff would be on the lookout for her. If they found her, they would disqualify her, she would forfeit her entry fee and any winnings she had accumulated before they found her. Given that the World Series of Poker already knows about her and has not released the rules yet, but presumably plans to make the rules so that they explicitly exclude what she is planning on doing, do you think she has any reasonable legal chance of being able to enter successfully dressed as a man?
Only if she wants to spend a lot of money and get it in front of a court after her application and before the tournament starts, and she can get a temporary restraining order. But, holy crud, what are they talking about here? Is this rule going to be you can't alter your appearance to play in our video poker or to play in our poker tournament? Are they going to say you can't? All baseball caps must be worn forward. You can't wear sunglasses.
And if you're transgender,
this is where I was going. I'm working right towards this. All of a sudden, we have transgender discrimination. I don't know which letters fit here, but somewhere it's in one of those 17 after LGBTQ that deal with cross-dressers and this, that, and the other. And why in the heck does... Why do they give a care?
Yeah, why do they care? That is... Yeah. Yeah.
Apparently... Years ago, a professional named Phil Locke, dressed as an old man, which apparently didn't fool many people at the table, but they decided if you're a player, they want you to know who you are. So he was not allowed to dress as a old man.
But apparently, what if he had put on all that makeup as an old man, but wore a sign around his chest that said Phil Locke? I mean, would that be okay? I don't know. I just think Caesars is really... barking up the wrong tree.
Yeah, I think that this, the way it was presented and what I'm hearing, this is just an invitation to have a bunch of differently dressed people outside the front of your casino marching around and creating a havoc where you really don't need one.
Right. And this woman is writing a book about all this and about being a woman playing poker. And for her to get any sort of action like that is only going to help her tremendously, right?
Well, no, I think she'll get a lot less action as a man.
No, I
oh, casino action.
No,
or
no,
poker action.
No, I'm talking about, I think she's on national news if they throw her out.
Oh, sure. And that was just a joke about the action.
Yeah.
I don't know many guys who chase after the women dressed like guys, but
you should get out more, Bob. Okay.
I think they have conventions for those people.
A player on the WizardofVegas.com site wants gaming to rule whether preferential shuffling in blackjack is legal. Preferential shuffling is when a player who is tracking the cards believes the odds are in his favor and so increases his bet, and the dealer goes ahead and shuffles prematurely simply because the player increased his bet.
All done, all gone, decided a number of times. It's a countermeasure. Countermeasures are allowed. It all changes when that first card is dealt. It all changes when that first card is dealt, but up till that point, they can shuffle. I have never seen anything to the contrary. They tested it in New Jersey, and they also tested it here in Nevada through the federal courts. Actually, it was Ken Houston who did that, but it got dismissed on other grounds. But it was pretty clear if you read the case history on that nobody was very impressed with his position.
But what if there's not a player raising their bets? What if you have dealers that are just told, count the decks, and whenever they're positive, shuffle them? How does that not fit the definition of cheating? You're altering the odds of the game.
That's not the question that was asked.
Okay. Well, I'm asking a new question now.
The new question now is, I think that they can get away with it. This is a very personal opinion to me. It's something that I've carried through as I've written about gaming and as I've addressed it in the courts. It's a competition. Okay. And the rules are out there, and I've always argued that it is insane for these people to think that a hole carder would be a cheater or a card counter would be a cheater or that it was a scam of some kind. It's using a skill in a competition between you and the dealer, and I can't be consistent unless I also get to say that the casino gets to apply the skills of their shills, players, if you will, the dealer, against the player as well.
Not the answer we wanted to hear.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, you know, understand and go to the breakout joints here where you get the 21-year-old dealers just out of dealer school and stuff and who the dealers are in this town. And then work out in your own mind, Richard, what are the odds that you're going to come up against a dealer who is either going to be a mechanic or a card counter of any proficiency while you're a player?
Oh, it's rare.
But
it certainly happens.
And as a skilled blackjack player, if you are, I would not presume to publish you out that way to the masses. I don't know, actually. But you would recognize.
He's been barred from the blackjack ball for winning too many times, and you're suggesting that possibly he might be an okay blackjack player? Is that where this conversation has just gone?
I'm just trying to not out him for the rest of the casino industry. But no, my point is, you as a skilled blackjack player, having seen that happen twice, are going to know that this dealer's counting.
Yeah.
And the same way a casino doesn't want to play against you if you're a counter, don't you get to get up and go, I'm not playing here.
And you know what? I don't get offended if they do that to me. Okay. Right? I agree with you. I'm like, okay, that's part of the game, right? But when I see someone doing that to just the uneducated schmoes that are just sitting there gambling, it offends me.
Well, you can be offended all you want, but right. You know, they have the ability to not be schmoes.
Yeah.
I'm a schmo. So you know what I do? I don't play blackjack.
Okay. But maybe you don't have the ability not to be a schmo.
I don't have the time to invest in not being a schmo.
Very good. Thank you for taking that lightly. Let's move on. Phil Ivey.
By the way, who used schmo first?
I think I did.
Good, because I'm not sure that you can actually, in this politically correct era, be calling people schmos.
Really?
I don't know. It's not.
But all three of us used it, so that
I know
we can be equally offended.
Is anybody in this room? Is anybody here Jewish? No. I know a lot of Yiddish, and I'm not sure what schmo
actually.
I don't
think schmo is Yiddish.
Oh yeah, it is.
Really?
Starting with SCH, I would think so.
Yeah. But I don't think it's the same as a putz or a schmegala. So I don't know.
Moving on?
Yeah, all right.
This is a guy who might not be Jewish. Phil Ivey versus the Borgata and Jamako. Ivey lost the first round of the Borgata and apparently needed to wait until the Borgata-Jamako case was settled before the courts would hear Ivey's case on appeal. A few weeks ago, a judge ruled that Jamako might possibly be liable for the cost of the decks of cards, which is around $27. Presumably, this opens the door for Ivy's appeal. Now, Bob Nersessian, have I laid out the situation correctly? And if so, what do you think is going to happen now?
I think that what you have is an interim decision that is providing an indication. It really works like this. As soon as there is what is called a final judgment that addresses all the claims before the Jamako Ivy Borgata case that is before that court, that triggers the time to appeal, and any appeal before that time is premature. The reason Ivy has to wait is because Jamako Borgata is still ongoing, and from the way you've described it, this is not yet a final judgment. It is an interim ruling. So when there is a final judgment that also takes Jamako out of the case or finishes the case with Jamako, that's when the time to file the appeal starts.
Okay, so they can get hung up on this $27 for a long time.
Yeah, it's a bad beat where he's stuck, because I am really sort of surprised that the court won't certify. You know what I'm really surprised at?
Please tell us.
I am just surprised and aghast and agog. Is that enough?
All three.
Yeah. That Borgata is so ridiculous as to claim that edge sorting is a card defect, or that the ability to edge sort. This has been going on. I think Bill Zender wrote about this discrepancy on the back of playing cards 30 years ago.
Stanford, it's in Professional Blackjack. That came out in the late 70s.
Okay. Well, there you go. Cards have always had this. And I don't know, as a card manufacturer, even with the faded edges, how the heck you can guard against a perfect cut on every deck. That's not how it works. These things are printed in huge sheets. Taking it one step further, how hard is it to do a kill shuffle as part of your dealing as a casino? This is all on Borgata, and the idea that Jamako made bad playing cards is freaking humorous. Okay? But yet everybody's jumped on it because the casinos will do anything they can to prevent themselves from paying a player that has won in this competition by getting a leg up by understanding the rules and the game better than the casino does.
Amen, brother.
Moving on.
We're moving fast.
In Wisconsin, there were some phone charging machines where you could play video poker. Gambling devices are illegal there, except in certain circumstances. The owner of the machines thinks he has found a loophole in the law. First judge says, nope, you haven't. The judge says it's a gambling machine and it's illegal. Do you have any opinion on this, Bob Nersessian?
Yeah, it's a gambling game. And again, something I cited earlier, the guy who's written on this that lays it out pretty clearly, because this is the juicy fruit in the slot machine and a thousand other things that played like that. The free games on a pinball machine, all of that kind of stuff. This is all laid out in Nelson Rose's book, Gambling and the Law. And he doesn't have a loophole in the law. The other thing that happens is whenever somebody thinks they have a loophole in the law to get around gambling laws, the courts are very wont to say, oh, that's some crazy loophole. We don't accept those.
Actually, while we're on this subject, I'm going off script here, but there was this ruling, I think, in Washington recently where they were saying that social gambling is illegal because there is consideration. Like, are you familiar with MyVegas, some of these Facebook-type games? All the casinos have them now, where there's no money involved. They give you free chips, you play these free games, but if you run out of the free chips and you want more, you can buy some. But you can't cash them out. So Washington has now ruled that this is gambling.
So Washington is making Candy Crush illegal?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. Yes.
Wow.
This is Washington State.
Yeah, Washington State. Yeah. I think it was Washington State. But yeah, I mean, all Pokemon Go, right? I mean, basically every game on your phone.
I understand it. I understand the analysis. I'm not a judge in the state of Washington. There is authority that says that is gambling, and there's authority that says that it isn't. You're surprised. Yeah, I'm a little surprised, too, mostly considering the addiction of three members of my family to Candy Crush, because I don't think they're gambling when they're playing it. Also, you have the biggie is you have the option to not buy the stuff. But you also have the option to not buy chips.
Yeah, exactly.
But what do you... And, nope, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. That was pretty shocking.
Thanks for going off script.
there'll be a lot of billion-dollar companies that are in a lot of trouble if that moves forward.
Yeah, you know, thank you. That's why I bought King, the maker of Candy Crush, short yesterday, because I knew you were going to talk about this or sold it. I'm teasing, obviously, but. Would that you have that kind of effect across the world to move the stock market?
Yeah, I did not know that gambling with an edge had quite that influence.
I'm a powerful guy.
Who possibly knows something about blackjack, we determined today. Yeah. We're going to take a brief break, listen to our sponsors. We'll be back talking to Bob Nersessian. The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In April, the promotion of the month involves free buffets. Earn 300 points between 3 a.m. and 1 p.m. from Monday through Thursday and earn a free lunch buffet. Earn 600 points in that same period and earn both a lunch buffet and a dinner buffet. If you fail to earn the 600 points prior to 1 p.m. but do earn them prior to 8 p.m., you earn a dinner buffet but not the lunch buffet. You print the vouchers at the kiosk when earned. You may use the coupons for a lesser meal, such as a lunch or dinner coupon may be used for breakfast. Also, you may redeem as many coupons as you have at one meal should you have a whole bunch of friends you wish to treat. Also at the South Point in April, for players who provided their email address for 4 Friday through Sunday weekends, those players may come in and play and earn additional free play. The amount you earn is usually more than your normal free play amount, with the players with the biggest mailers receiving the biggest amounts. South Point runs versions of this promotion 3 or 4 times a year, meaning that if you're local, it pays to give them your email address. Monday remains senior days. For those 50 years of age and older, you get half-price meals using points, half-price movies, free slot tournament. At VideoPoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the game. The game of the week is Quick Quads. Quick Quads is a 6-coin per line game where if you get 3 of a kind and the other 2 cards add up to the rank of the 3 of a kind, you get credit for a Quick Quad, paying the same amount as a regular 4 of a kind. You get lots of extra 4 of a kinds. You get them quickly. The extra amount you pay for the 6 coins per line makes up for that. The strategy is interesting. It's different. I personally enjoy the game a lot. All right, Bob Nersessian. If you leave Nevada owing a marker and a Nevada court issues a warrant for your arrest, will other states in the United States extradite you back to Nevada?
You want the long answer or the short answer?
Let's start with a short, and if we like it, we'll move on. If we don't like it, we'll take the long one.
Yes.
They will extradite you.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I know somebody who...
You want the long answer? Yes.
Okay. I know somebody who was stopped at customs coming into the country. They had been out of the country on a vacation. They were in California, and exactly that. They threw him in the lockup and extradited him to Nevada over an unpaid marker.
The extradition orders on the NCIC, they run your make anywhere. They're going to bring you in on Nevada's fugitive warrant. They're going to notify the state. They're going to say, we have your guy. Now, there are some procedural things you can do on the end where you've been picked up. I am obviously making this a longer answer, but Michigan one time in a case that happened tried to say, no, public policy won't let us have this person have to stand trial in a foreign jurisdiction where he committed, where he was gambling and took out the marker. But those markers are so inherently illegal in Michigan that our public policy won't allow one of our citizens to be extradited. And that was the Michigan Court of Appeals. And the Michigan Supreme Court took it up, held it for about a day and a half and said, no, Court of Appeals, you're insane. There's this little document called the United States Constitution. There's a clause in the United States Constitution that's called the Full Faith and Credit Clause. We don't have that option. Put that guy on a train. So
that's the long answer. Didn't like that one either. Yeah. Okay, let's move on. A blackjack player wants to know if it's legal to show another player's card as a form of ID when sitting down at a table rather than to be a refusal. He has a number of friends who are non-players and would love to get some free comps.
Every jurisdiction who has players' card casinos has prosecutors in the pockets of casinos that are trying right now today to make this a crime. As I understand from 4 cases that I've loosely followed, no court has yet to say that that's a crime. Okay? So it's likely not. But here's the rub. Okay? Getting dragged into the criminal justice system, even if you're going to win, is still
messy.
A huge loss. You know, the prosecutors have absolute prosecutorial immunity. They think it might be a charge. They bring it. Now you have to spend $30,000 or more or less on a defense attorney who's going to call me and have to pay me a $5,000 consultation fee to get my briefs. And then you're going to win and you're going to be out $40,000. So, you know, is that worth giving your friends some free comps?
Depends on the friend, I guess. Good. All right. Moving on. Bob Nersessian, would you allow a player to come in, pay you your hourly rate, and ask question after question after question during that hour?
No. No, 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 no,
That's
no,
what
no,
we
no.
do.
No. Yes, so, but you're different because there is an implied and at this point right now an express statement that everything I say here does not create any attorney-client relationships, and my statements on this show are pure opinion, okay? If he's paying me money for my answers, you guys don't pay me dick, okay?
Well, for sure we don't pay you that, but we give you free water.
So if he's in there and I'm answering his questions and I answer one wrong, I'm at risk of a malpractice suit. Here's my example. What you are asking for there is an opinion letter. Lawyers who write opinion letters, okay, at the big firms on one question, or even at my firm for one question, if it's an opinion that they are going to use later down the line to justify an action that they're taking that they're concerned about, my minimum fee on that is $20,000. Okay?
Wow.
If he's throwing me question after question, he can do that if he wants to pay me, but it's 20, 40, 60, 80. Question 5, 7 minutes in, he's into me for $100,000. Because our risk as attorneys is too great to allow that kind of thing to go on as a client. Okay?
Very good. I was going to ask what his hourly fee was in that case, but it doesn't seem to be necessary anymore.
So this guy should just, you know, next time.
Go buy my book.
Yes, buy his book. Absolutely. What's the name of that book again?
The Law for Gamblers.
Yeah, and you can get that at Amazon. But the other thing is, the guy should put his questions on Facebook or send them to us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com.
But then he loses the ability to have it be an express warranty that he can sue on, because I'm not standing behind the stuff I say on your show.
Right, right. Yeah, see? So it's win-win. We get another show out of it.
Moving on. Video poker machines display pay schedules either on the front of the machine or in easily found locations such as pressing the help button. The question is whether it is required to show the pay schedule on these machines, or is it merely just customary to do so?
Okay, I can give you the same long answer and short answer I gave a minute ago. It's required.
Was that the short one or the long one?
It's required. Okay. But no, that's a gaming rag. Okay. They have to have the pay schedule has to be on your table games too. Why do you think that's sitting out there on all those table games you walk up to?
Because the pit boss doesn't know what the payoffs are, and he has to come over and read the table to find out.
Well, I know that's true too.
I mean, who'd play a video poker machine where you don't know what it pays? Like, oh, I guess I'll just put some money in and see if it comes back out.
A player was trespassed at the Suncoast, which is a casino here in Las Vegas, for playing video poker when they offered 10 times points on 10-10-10, October 10th, 2010. He wants to know if that trespass affects his welcome at the poker room at the Orleans, which is a related property.
Okay. Now you're hitting my expertise.
Took us long enough, okay. Didn't it?
The statute would be, now notice, and let your reader, your listeners know, I have nothing in front of me. Okay. 207.200 of the Nevada Revised Statutes is the trespass statute. It provides that you have been trespassed when you have been warned by the owner or the occupant of a property to leave and not return. Okay? Now, when you ask the very question you asked, you raise a very interesting dichotomy. Let's look at Caesars Entertainment Properties, for example.
Okay.
At Caesars Entertainment, Caesars Palace, the owner of Caesars Palace and the occupant of Caesars Palace is a company called Desert Palace Inc. Okay? Never heard of it, right? Okay. It's Desert Palace Inc., DBA, Caesars Palace. That's the owner and the occupant. Now, you go across the street to, okay, Rio's a Harrah's property. So you go to Rio.
Yes.
Rio All Suites Hotel and Casino is owned by Rio Properties LLC. That is the owner and the occupant. If a security guard at Desert Palace doing business at Caesar's Palace tells you you can't go back to the Rio, or you can't come back here and you can't go into the Rio, has an owner or an occupant of the Rio told you you can't go there?
Doesn't sound like it.
Doesn't sound like it to me either. And at least one district court judge here in Clark County has agreed with that position. They can't bar you across properties. That security guard at Desert Palace does not have any status as an owner or occupant of Rio. That's not the exact cases, but this is the example I'm giving. Now, you got to step it up a level where I don't know what the current status is, but Suncoast, Gold Coast, and what's the one on Flamingo?
Gold Coast.
Gold Coast.
Oh, Suncoast, Gold Coast, and Orleans.
Yes.
Are all owned by one company.
Boyd.
No. Coast Casinos, Inc., which is a subsidiary of Boyd.
Okay.
Those three casinos are all owned by the same company. So the security guard at Suncoast is an employee of the owner or occupant of the Orleans. See what I'm saying?
Yes.
So that trespass warning would apply at the Orleans. A Caesars does not apply across properties. A Boyd applies across some properties, but Fremont is not owned by Coast Casinos. So the Suncoast trespass, if they give you that list of all Boyd properties, Boyd owns and occupies no Boyd casinos, to my knowledge. Caesars Entertainment owns and occupies no Caesars casinos, to my knowledge.
So what about the Caesars registered letter that many people got barring you from all Caesars properties?
Well,
everywhere.
Here's the question. That letter comes from Caesars Entertainment. It hasn't been tested yet, but I would propose that Caesars Entertainment doesn't own or occupy any of the casinos listed on that letter. All right? Now, again, if you run afoul of this, you've just put yourself into the criminal justice system. Okay?
Right.
And it might cost $100,000 for representation to clear your name. And
Nah. Not on a trespass, but it could result in you getting taken into a back room, being handcuffed, having your wrists bruised, and maybe even kicked in the head a little bit, and then losing the civil suit because they had a right to detain you and you were resisting. And all of that turns on whether or not it is a crime and whether or not Caesars can do that. I would suggest the statute says that Caesars Entertainment cannot do what they are purporting to do. But, again, an opinion. I've got one judge who said, yep, you're right, but that's one judge. There's 34 of them over there. And believe me, Caesars fought that very hard. They tried to say, oh, this is a distinction without a difference. This is an ipsy dixit in the law, and the bottom line is all of these are owned by Caesars Entertainment. Now, on my end, I have a slew of case law from all over the country that says a corporation or an entity can never take down the corporate walls they have erected. They have to live with them. So if Caesars Entertainment wants to make sure that Caesars Palace is a separate company called Desert Palace, they can't turn around and say, no, it's really us. Because they did that for the very purpose of saying when something goes wrong or when they bankrupt a third of their companies, they can say, that's not us.
Right.
Moving on.
Fine.
security comes up to you in a casino, can they demand to see your cell phone if it's in your pocket?
Oh, all of these. Yeah, they can demand it all day.
And if you say no, are you creating a crime?
No.
So they can demand it, and you can say, no,
you're
thank you.
You're talking about security guards.
Yeah. Right? Yes. Can yeah. I? Can I?
The,
Rob,
the question
Bob,
is,
give me your cell phone.
Can a cop
no.
say? Can a cop? Are you
No, a cop can't either.
Okay.
Yeah, a cop can arrest you for a crime committed in his presence. A cop can arrest you if he has probable cause or reasonable suspicion. He cannot demand words from you other than your identification or property from you in an investigation. There's nothing that says he can do that. But yet we have an amendment in the Constitution that says there is no such thing as an unreasonable search and seizure. You can't do that. And it is unreasonable to give the gendarmes of the state the ability to go rifle through people's pockets and force them to give up property just because they happen to be wearing a badge and graduated from some community college criminal justice program. I can't drive home tonight now, you know.
He's halfway to the ceiling, folks. I just thought, just a play-by-play here. All right. Different question on security. Maybe we can get him all the way up there. If a blackjack team member were reasonably surreptitiously videotaping, perhaps with an iPhone in the pocket, a team member's play, so that they could later talk about what errors were made, in general, is that a crime?
Wow, I should have read through the end of these. I didn't think we were going to finish them.
We're not going to finish them.
That just means you have to come back.
I did look at that earlier. My initial inclination is you haven't described a crime there, but you've described something that is going to... Because you are not using a device to gain a statistical edge over the game you're playing. Okay. Now, if you guys go into the restroom and watch that and you use it to find a tell on the dealer, now you've committed a crime.
Was it going into the restroom or was it? No, sorry. Now, if the security demands to see what you were videotaping.
That's the same question.
Are you? Can you refuse? Is that the same thing as before?
Yeah, you can refuse. Now, they may well work it up to a reasonable suspicion, where if they have reasonable suspicion of a gaming crime, they have the authority to detain you to call a police officer. And at that point, when the police officer shows up, he is going to get a look, see at what your camera says. So you're probably postponing the inevitable. And I know from what I said a minute ago, the cop can't look at it either. But the pressure is unbelievable when a police officer is saying, give me the camera now.
Then you have to give him your password?
No, you don't even have to give him your camera. They'll take it.
Okay, but then how are they going to get the password?
Well, that's fine. They
They're
don't get
ask
it.
You for it, and if you say no, then...
One of your next questions is, I read Bob's book,
yeah,
and
one.
I stuck pick with one. It, and I followed his instructions, and you know what? After 5 minutes of saying, no, I choose to leave, no, I choose to leave, they stood aside, and I walked out the door, okay? The hard part is having the Constitution to stand there and say, no, I choose to leave, or no, you can't see my cell phone. These guys are absolutely trained in how to get you to break down from that reticence. They've pulled it on me, and when they lost and I wouldn't give them what they wanted, they finally threw up their hands and they threw me in handcuffs. Okay?
That might not have been a smart move.
It wasn't. It cost them a lot of money. I'm not talking about it.
That's the story we all want to hear.
Nope. Perhaps you can't.
Okay.
Now, I think this is a question you were asking about. A casino wants to trespass a player. They've decided that they're trespassing him. So they come up behind him. Security guards, they say, step away from the table. Security guards surround them, maybe even linking arms. They say, we're going to trespass you. You'll be out of here in 10 minutes. The guy says, I want to leave now. You can't stop me. And they said, well, just 10 minutes. You'll be gone. If you don't touch us, we're not going to touch you. He goes, I want to go. And he tries to go underneath their arms, and they scoot together to move and stuff. Are there any crimes being committed here?
Yeah.
In which, what is the crime?
False imprisonment is being committed against the patron by the casino. And if it's not false imprisonment, there's an old tort that is not used anymore, and I get in a lot of trouble for bringing up things like this. But we are a common law state. That's NRS 1.030, and the common law is the rule of decision in all courts in Nevada. And there is, it's not that it used to be, it still is a tort. It's called interference with locomotion. Has nothing to do with trains. It means blocking you from where you want to go. And unless you have a right to block someone, you can't block them. Now, I've gone off on a side thing. This is another 207-200 question, and the question presupposes something that's insane, and it goes to another question that you had in there, too, about, or that you have raised with me about this, that what we're talking about today, and I know we're out of time, so I'm going to try and get both of these in at once. The idea that you have to be formally trespassed before you are given an effective trespass warning under this Justice Court case called Wilkerson is entirely at odds with the statute. The idea that a trespass, and I get where it comes from a New Jersey doctrine, the idea that a trespass warning expires after a year is not authorized by any statute. Here's a valid trespass as the statute defines it. Get out of my casino and never come back. Said to you while you're walking towards the door in a fashion that everybody knows you heard it. You have now been trespassed. And if you re-enter that property, you are committing a misdemeanor and can be arrested. There is nothing that says that they have to read you a card. There is nothing that says they have to get it on video. There is nothing that says they need a picture of you. It says they have to warn you to leave and not come back. That's it. And if you violate that directive, and they have told you to leave for a reason that is not illegal, you're trespassed.
Very good. Thank you. And Bob, we know you have another appointment. Thank you very, very much for taking the time to be with us today. We do have more questions, so you will have to come back and see us again.
You said that last time.
And yeah. It was true last
time. And I looked at the questions last time, and they weren't the ones you asked me this time.
And we're going to say it again next time, too.
Thank you very much.
You know how much fun it is to be with you guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit a royal flush, everybody. Good day.